This is The Thirsty Developer, episode number 11 for February 6th, 2008, Continuous Integration. Welcome everyone to episode number 11 of The Thirsty Developer. I'm Dave Boss, coming to you once again from Studio DG. And once again, up in Studio M is our good friend Larry Clarkin. Hello, Larry. How are we doing today?
We're doing great, Dave. But, you know, you sound a little tired.
Slightly tired.
Maybe you, missed out on a little sleep this weekend?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, it was a little bit sleepless, you could say. We had the Sleepless in Chicago event over the weekend. And, yeah, that was a long night. Yeah, certainly. So we had this SharePoint, Sleepless in Chicago event, started on Friday, did a little bit of SharePoint training, and had a developer competition on Friday night that led into Saturday morning. And the whole idea is, you stay up all night working on your SharePoint project, and you have this competition where you present to a panel of judges, and the winners, actually played off pretty good for them. They actually won a full expense trip to the Office Developer Conference in San Jose that's coming up this weekend. And I will say that, I pretty much stayed up the entire night. I took a little cat nap for a couple hours. I will say the conference room floor looks a little more comfortable than it actually is at 3:30 in the morning. When I did wake up, a couple hours later, I basically had to call my chiropractor.
Yeah, we got to get some kind of evangelist issued cot for the conference room.
Sleeping bags,
overnight things. Yeah.
Yep. But anyways, the turnout wasn't as good as it could have been because we did have the Chicago blizzard of 2008 the night before and the morning of. So that kind of hurt attendance a little bit, but nonetheless, we still had a good time and we had a decent turnout, and all in all, it was a good time. So congratulations to the winners. They're going to be heading off to Office DevCon this weekend, but unfortunately, Larry, we can't go to the Office Developer Conference because we're going to be in Seattle next week.
Yeah, Dave, we're going to head out to Seattle for some internal training. It's called Tech Ready. It's a really cool event. It's kind of a week-long conference where the product teams and different people will present to the Microsoft field, MCS, DPE, and the folks from our sales team that are more technical in nature.
Right. So this is kind of like our internal PDC conference. We have it twice a year, and it's essentially for the entire technical field of the Microsoft field offices all over the world.
And it's a great chance for us to meet some people from the product team and record a couple podcasts while we're out there, right?
That's right. So if anybody, has any interest in us meeting up with some of the product team, try to get some interviews, let us know. If there's somebody that you'd like us to try to talk to, shoot us an email at thirstydeveloperlive.com. And also, if we have any listeners from the Seattle area, we love to meet up with you. So if you're in the Seattle area, listening to Thirsty Developer, let us know. We'll certainly buy the first mojito at ZigZag. Just shoot us an email at thirstydeveloperlive.com.
Yeah, Dave, and TechReady is kind of the first conference that we're going to, first of a number of conferences that we're going to over the next month or so. We'll be at MIX, March 5th through 7th in Vegas. If you guys want to register to go to that conference, it's visitmix.com. And just like with Dave's offer for the Seattle area folks there, anybody going to MIX will definitely have a listener meetup and get together and have a drink.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you got to take advantage while you're in Vegas, right? So we're not quite sure what we're going to do yet, but we'll figure something out when we get closer to the dates. But yeah, we'd love to see everybody out at, in Vegas.
And then right after Vegas, you're headed out to South by Southwest.
Yeah, so that just looking at my calendar, I don't know what I was thinking, but yeah, so Seattle next week, then home for a couple weeks. We have some internal meetings, and then the following week is MIX, and then right up leading against MIX is South by Southwest down in Austin, Texas. So I'm going to go straight from Vegas to Austin, and if anybody's going to South by Southwest, certainly ping me, thirstydeveloperlive.com. Love to meet up with you there as well. I've been to Austin, but it's always been sort of the outskirts of Austin. I've never been downtown where all the happening places are. So I'm actually really looking forward to it. South by Southwest is a very interesting collection of people and thought leaders and just visionaries. And so I'm really looking forward to South by Southwest. So if you're going to be heading there, let me know. Love to hook up with you.
Yeah, and it's not too early to start looking at Tech Ed, and then in the fall PDC. Couple other conferences that we've got coming up.
That's right. Yep, absolutely. So we're pretty busy, to say the least. But it's all fun, right? This is all fun that we love going to conferences. We love meeting people. I mean, I don't know about you, Larry, but every time I go to one of these conferences, it always kind of energizes me to get just back to loving technology again. Sometimes you get a little, you wane a little bit, so you start working with the same stuff over and over. But you go to these conferences, you kind of learn what's new, what's coming around the corner, and you just get all jazzed up again. It's really kind of a boost of energy, if you will.
Yeah, you can't wait to get home and start applying what you've learned.
That's right, and just get overloaded again.
Yep.
All right, so with that, I think we should move over to a blog you should know. So, Larry, I'll let you go first this time. What's a blog that we should know?
Well, I'm going to point out Chris Bernard's blog. Chris is one of our compatriots in developer and platform evangelism at Microsoft. He is the user experience evangelist for the central region. So whereas, you know, my audience is I'm supposed to talk to architects, you're supposed to talk to the developers. He talks to the designers and the, you know, the marketing thinkers of the organization. He's got a great blog. It's called Design Thinking Digest. And it's a pretty long one. And he actually told me a kind of funny story that he used to have chrisbernard.com, but I think he sold it to a State Farm agent who really wanted that name. So he had to pick another one. So Design
Did he
Thinking
get any
Digest,
deals on an insurance policy?
Yeah, maybe. Design Thinking Digest. And one of the things that Chris does is he gives some phenomenal presentations. He's always got these great slide decks. And he actually uses a technology called SlideShare that he turned me on to, where you go to SlideShare and you upload your PowerPoint, and then it lets people see it on your site so you can embed it with an object tag, you know, in your blog. And then it also gives them the option of downloading, you know, a PowerPoint version of your slide deck. And if you go out there, Chris has just posted like 8 phenomenal decks that he's done over the last year or so. It's a good reason to go out there and check it out.
Very cool. So, yeah, Chris is a great guy. So my blog you should know this week is actually, you know, a blog that I've been tracking for a few years now. And if you're in the Team System community, you already know this blog. And I mean, you have to. It's Rob Caron's blog. And Rob Caron is essentially a human aggregator for all Visual Studio Team System content. Rob, he used to be actually on the content team, essentially the documentation team for Visual Studio Team System. Right when they first shipped the product, and he since moved on to other developer marketing roles inside of Microsoft, but he still, you know, keeps his blog up to date, and he's just a fiend at posting new content all around Visual Studio Team System. And I invite you to go out to Rob's blog at blogs.msdn.com/Rob Caron. That's RobCaron.
So Dave, talking about Rob's blog is kind of a good transition into today's interview. I talked with Paul Hacker, who's a Microsoft MVP on Team Foundation Server and Team System when I was down in Indianapolis. And we talked about the concept of continuous integration and also how you could do continuous integration with one of the new features of Team Foundation Server 2008.
Right. So continuous integration was one of those, you know, sorely missed items when Team Foundation V1 came out. And, you know, the product team listened long and hard, and they actually, you know, were able to get Team Foundation inside of the Visual Studio 2008 version of Team Foundation Server. And, you know, continuous integration is one of these things that's kind of popped up on the scene in the industry for, a good 3-4 years ago is when I first noticed it. And it's this whole idea that, you know, as you're building your application, or as you're working on coding your application, and you check in code, there's a process in the background that is essentially compiling your entire application. Not necessarily just the pieces that you checked in, but the application as a whole to do a checkpoint to say, does the application compile? And if it doesn't, then, you know, you kind of get a notice right away that, hey, something's amiss. So when you have all these different people working on your project, checking code in left and right, there's something is that somebody may check in, and then you come around in the back end and check in something a little bit later that could sort of trigger something to not compile because you might not have the latest code on your machine and vice versa with the other individual on the team. And the system, the server on the back end, is compiling your application. If it compiles, it just kind of continues on. If it does not compile, it actually sends alerts right away to notify you that, hey, something's amiss here.
Yeah, it kind of takes the concept of the nightly build, which has always been a best practice, to the next level, because you're basically going to be doing a build, you know, each time somebody commits some source code to the tree.
Yep. So the idea is that, you know, the nightly build back in the day is like you wouldn't know if something was wrong until next day, essentially the next morning when you came in. But with the power of the machines that we have today, you know, we can compile applications much quicker, much more efficiently. And so now we can sort of do these continuous builds just to make sure, just to do checkpoints.
And with that, let's listen to the interview.
Yep. So let's roll the tape.
Hi, this is Larry Clark, and I'm sitting here with Paul Hacker. We're in Indianapolis, Indiana, at the Microsoft office. We're recording this podcast on a gloomy gray Friday. Paul, can you introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, I'm Paul Hacker. I am a Microsoft MVP with Visual Studio Team System, and I'm also real active in the .NET community and in general in Indianapolis area.
Yeah, Paul, you run a special interest group, you know, under the NDA umbrella, and you guys meet totally separate from them about once a month. When you had the idea originally, you know, it was about, I met you about a year ago, and you said, you know, hey, I think a team system group would be a great idea. I thought, man, you know, I could see the first three or four meetings, you know, having some things to talk about. But, you know, after the fourth meeting, when you kind of got through the fourth role, you know, what are you really going to cover? But it's been quite the opposite, right? You could probably meet twice a month and still have things to talk about, right?
That's correct, Larry. We're really happy with the way things have turned out with the group. I've got a lot of support from folks in the community that we didn't know about, that were really excited about TFS, and also from the general public in terms of the MVP community wanting to let us use things like third-party tools. So we've been able to have meetings wrapped around those third-party tools and being able to show them off, and then that in turn just gets, you know, more visibility for the group itself. So we're really excited. It's continuing to grow, and there's never seems to be a lack of a topic to talk about.
Yep. And a lot of people listening to this podcast are probably from Indianapolis, but there are a lot more who aren't. We actually have listeners in you know, Costa Rica, for instance, and we have a lot of guys you know, out on the West Coast. So they can still tap into Paul Hacker's knowledge because you run a newsletter.
Correct. I'm glad you bring that up, Larry. I had an idea a few months back to start a newsletter that would kind of pull all the resources for Team System and Visual Studio Team Foundation Server into one place where people could go and find the information they were looking for. I found that the Microsoft site was kind of difficult sometimes to traverse to get the information you needed, and there was so much information out there you didn't know what was right, what was wrong. So what I've decided is that let's start this newsletter and see how it goes and talk about a specific topic each month. So last month we talked about all the great features surrounding builds and the new release of Team System. The newsletter has just taken off. We're really excited about where that's going.
And how do people get the newsletter?
They can go to tfstimes.com. That's the name of the newsletter. And it's I post a newsletter there for the month. And then I also archive it. And there's an archive link on the left-hand side of the website where I post all previous editions of the newsletter in a zipped format so they can download them and read them at their leisure.
Great. So you said that this month was about, you know, the build process, you know, in Team Foundation Server 2008, you know, which is actually, you know, one of my favorite features of the Visual Studio 2008 family that's come out. Little bit of background. I've been doing continuous integration for years, you know, before it was available in the tool. And I think Mark Strawmeyer and I were talking about this in a previous podcast. I think that continuous integration is one of the things that can really bump up your code quality. But why don't you give us Paul's definition of CI?
My definition of CI is do it. You know, continuous integration to me is one of those topics that a lot of companies don't like to talk about, but I think is really just something that every developer should embrace. Every developer that wants to better themselves and grow as a developer, which is really ultimately what the tools are trying to help us do, is grow as a developer, should be considering continuous integration. You know, we should be taking advantage of continuous integration, maybe not on every single check-in to source, but we should be taking advantage of continuous integration numerous times throughout the day as we're working with source code.
So the way that continuous integration works is I, as a developer, you know, am, you know, doing code, and I'm ready to check things in. And that's one of the key components, is that this, you know, assumes that you're using a source control management system. If you're not, please go out and get one. Microsoft has a couple of them. You don't have to use Microsoft ones. Just go out and do source control management. That's just an absolute must. But when I check in my changes to the trunk, you know, or the branch, you know, wherever I'm working on, there's a process that's running that kind of watches that.
Yes, in my experience with continuous integration really is with Team Foundation Server and Team System, and so there's pieces that are in the background just watching and listening to check-ins that occur. And it's really gotten a lot better. So with the new release of Team System, where I can actually decide how often I want that continuous integration to run. Do I want it to run every single time? Things like that.
Okay, and so what happens is that after a predetermined amount of time, you know, elapses from a check-in, you said that, you know, you can do it on every check-in, you could do it several times a day or whatever. There's a build that's run. And the purpose of that build is to make sure that the code that I've checked in hasn't broken the build, right?
That's correct. What you're trying to do is make sure that and how I like to look at it is I'm checking in the code, but prior to me checking in the code is I'm going to actually get the latest, because while I'm working, there's probably a few other developers that are currently working and checking in their code. So what I want to do before I do my check-in is I actually want to go and do a get latest and make sure I bring down the latest code, make sure it compiles correctly on my machine, and then go ahead and check the code in. And then, of course, it's going to run an end-to-end build for me, so I know that anything I've just done is not really broken anything that's currently up in source control. So we're always having a consistent build, and our quality is always going to be a lot better.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because when I first started doing CI, you know, several years ago, we noticed that the real problem wasn't anything that any one developer did. Right. You know, that, you know, my code, you know, didn't necessarily break the build. The problem was the present, you know, my changes in the presence of all the other ones. The example here is, you know, I make a change and, you know, it works just fine. Paul is doing a simultaneous change two cubes over from me. You know, we're not talking like we should be probably right at our daily team standups.
Right.
But, you know, Paul makes a change that, you know, works for him just fine, but in the presence of my other change, together we've broken the build. And that's what CI identifies really quickly, is that, you know, hey, we have an integration problem, you know, with the code that we've got checked in. And the real benefit here is the amount of time that it takes to identify a new error that's popped up is greatly reduced.
Yes, that's right, Larry. And not only that is, if you think about it, the longer that you wait to do a check-in or to run a build, end-to-end build, the harder it's going to be and the more expensive it's going to be to correct that build. I know what I did an hour ago. I don't know what I did a week ago, or I may not remember exactly what I did. So not only do I have to go back and figure out what exactly I did, now I got to go back and remember what a piece of code. I could be working on a completely different piece of the application. I may not even know exactly where it's at. So I'm going to have to spend all that time and resources trying to track it down. So what that continuous integration allows me to do is go back very quickly and effectively correct the issue, and therefore saving a lot of time and resources.
Yeah, and what it really is meant to do is to get the team talking. You know, wait, the build's broke. We got to immediately fix that, right? Because that's absolutely critical. You can't make any forward progress on testing or anything like that until the build works, right?
That's right, exactly. And I'm glad you bring that up, that the team's talking, and you've said that a few times, is that, yes, it is to foster that communication amongst teams. I don't no longer live in a vacuum. I'm not just a guy in the corner writing code. I'm a part of a bigger whole, and we all need to learn to communicate with each other so that when those things do happen, we can stop, we can effectively triage that issue, get that build going again, and then move on with our software development.
Okay, and let's compare and contrast, you know, really quickly, because there's another thing that can, you know, get you a lot of the same benefits without actually going through the continuous integration process, and that is a nightly build. And if you're not going to do CI, if there's some reason that you can't, I do know for a fact that there's a lot of customers who have mammoth projects with multiple solutions, and you know, each one of the solutions contains, you know, multiple projects, and let's say the build just like flat out takes a long time. Like, you know, if it takes 45 minutes to build your project, which would be a huge project, you know, an alternative is don't do continuous integrations during the day, but, you know, do a nightly build. You know, at 2 in the morning when the systems are pretty well idle, let's fire off a build. So first thing in the morning, everybody can come on and see, you know, red light, green light.
Right, you're right, and you're right there. It's most folks that are doing continuous integration are also doing a nightly build, but in your scenario, you're right. That would literally bog down your server for too much of the day, so it makes sense to schedule a nightly build, which is really easily facilitated in the 2008 version of Team System with a scheduler piece built in. So I can actually go out and schedule that build to run at, like you say, 2 o'clock in the morning, and the beautiful thing with that is that I can get notified, so if before I leave the house in the morning, if I'm really, really, really concerned about what's the status of my build, I can have it sent to my cell phone or my PDA, or I can go and, you know, log into my account and check my email, and it will send me the status of that build. So I'll know right then and there. Is there something I'm going to walk into the office and have to triage, or did everything go good?
Yeah, and there was actually, I saw this really cool website where they were doing continuous integration, and I don't think it was a Team Foundation server. I think they were using Cruise Control or another product, and these guys had bought a USB lava lamp that could go, you know, red or green, and they actually had it monitor the build with this lava lamp. So everybody walking through the office could see the green lava lamp to know that the build was good, or a red lava lamp to know that there was an issue. And I think that was kind of a fun way to draw attention to the build. And that's one of the key things, is making sure that, you know, these builds just aren't running off. And, you know, once a week you go out and you look and say, oh, geez, yeah, our last four builds failed. Maybe we ought to start looking at that. You know, you mentioned text messaging your phone. You mentioned emailing people. What are some of the other things that you've done, you know, to get project teams to kind of pay attention to that?
I personally haven't done a lot, but with the new version of Team System, the build API is now open, so we can program against that build API. So a good friend of mine and a fellow MVP, Martin Woodward, has actually put together a little sample application. It actually runs, and it looks like a Silverlight application with the reflection and all, and it monitors the bills, and you can push that out to a widescreen TV. An LCD reader, one of those bars that's LCD that goes around. You could put that in your development shop. But right now, with the open API, really the sky's the limit. What do you want to do now to notify your build department? So some of those things were really possible before, but it took a little bit of work. Now it's really easy to really push it out to whatever media that you care to.
And we've been talking a lot. You mentioned a lot of the new features in Team Foundation Server 2008. Brand new product. You know, honestly, I don't know if you can actually go out and buy it at this point. I don't know if it's on a price list or whatever, but it's been available on MSDN downloads for MSDN subscribers for a little while. Still a new product, but I know that there's a lot of people out there who are probably listening that are still on Team Foundation Server 2005. You know, you talked about all these new features that are available there. What is available for the people still running the older product?
That's a great question, Larry. There's a lot. It's not like you have to just abandon that or not take be able to get advantage of that. There is a product called Team CI, and if you Google Team CI, you'll find it. And Mickey Gousset, another fellow MVP, has this site called Team System Rocks, and he has that download there. And what Team CI does is Team CI allows you to do multiple continuous integrations in Visual Studio 2005. So in 2005, you were able to set up a continuous integration, but it had to run on every check-in. And it had to run on a particular branch with a particular build type, and you really didn't have any flexibility. So Team CI is a product that lets you, that actually looks at your check-ins and says, oh, you're checking in against two different pieces of the application and two different branches. We can run builds against both of those and do continuous integration. Oh, and by the way, you want to schedule it to run every 30 minutes or every 15 minutes or whatever? We can do that also. So it's a great tool. Again, that's Team CI, and that's what the folks with 2005 would really want to use for their continuous integration.
Yeah, so, you know, the build functionality's been there, you know, for two releases now. So, you know, all of the benefits of automating your build, making sure it runs on a build server correctly, you know, defining your steps in MS Build and all that's been there. What Team CI does is just adds this continuous integration feature. The difference between 2005 and 2008 is 2005 you had to download this separate tool, which Team CI is a free tool, right?
Correct, it is free.
You know, you had to download the separate tool and you had to configure it, you know, not an arduous step, but still a step that you had to do. And literally in 2008, it's right click, you know, enable continuous integration.
Correct. It's built right in. You have a nice UI to work with. And the fact that you have the scheduler and everything built in, where, you know, anytime you're working with a third party tool, you're bound to have some type of issue at some point, because again, every third party tool has a breaking point for the application, where if it's built in, it's probably been thoroughly tested as part of the tool.
Well, one of the real differences, one of the real barriers is, you know, when you work in a typical corporate development shop, it's tough to get things installed on a server. You know, so if you have TFS already installed, it's really easy to right click and say, you know, I'm going to go with it. Going to your sysadmin and saying, hey, I want to install this Team CI thing might be an issue for a lot of developers, because, you know, with, you know, policies and things like that, it's tough to get stuff put on servers these days.
Yeah, you're right. It is. And you can't just, in fact, I've been in places where we were just told not to. So there's a set of power tools that comes along with TFS that a lot of people are familiar with. Brian Harry and Buck Hodges usually are pushing those out. But a lot of places I've worked at say, no, we are not going to allow third-party utilities. We don't know where it's from. We don't know what it is. And we don't know who built it. So even though it comes from internal people, they still are just really against you trying to do it. So again, with 2008, you have that all built in. It's really nice because you can just use it.
Yeah, and one of the key things, the difference, you know, between a community developed thing and something developed by a software company is, you know, if it's a community thing and it breaks, and Team CI is rock solid, you know, it's very simple what it's doing and all that, so the chance of it's going to break is, you know, pretty minuscule. But when it breaks, you want somebody's, you know, I like to call it somebody's throat to choke, right? You want to be able to call Microsoft and Premier Support and say, you know, fix this, it's broke. You know, where in a community there is no throat to choke.
Right, you're right there. What I will say though about people who sometimes do question the third party tools is at least the ones I've seen come down for Team System are built by usually by MVPs or internal Microsoft folks in their off time or their spare time or something as a pet project. So I've noticed that the quality of these third-party tools is really solid. But yes, you're right. There are issues, and when there are issues, it's very difficult to get it fixed immediately. You can track down the person, and you can submit a bug or something, but again, it's going to take you some time. It's not like you can pick up the phone and call Premier Support and get that. You know, you don't have that emotional hug that you would expect, you know, from a piece of the application that's built in.
Right. And, you know, just for completeness sake, if somebody's not running Team Foundation Server, either 2005 or 2008, there are other, you know, third-party continuous integration products. There's a lot that are purchased. There are some that are freely downloaded. I mentioned cruisecontrol.net. Nice thing about cruisecontrol.net, you know, it's a ThoughtWorks product. Is it actually runs against Team Foundation Server. So if there's something that the, you know, continuous integration server doesn't do for you, you know, the TFS 2008 one, you can run cruise control against Team Foundation Server.
Yes, that's right. So you're not like pigeonholed into just using what you have. You can use other tools out there, and more of those third party vendors that have processes or have applications are working with to make sure they're incorporated into and can work with Team Foundation Server. So that's really the support in the community is really nice, especially from those other folks that have competing type products.
Yeah, and the key thing here, you know, my message is, you know, I'd love you to buy the Microsoft product. We're very proud of it. It's very good. But using continuous integration is the important thing. You know, if there's something that prevents you from, you know, using, you know, our product, look at the third-party ones. Look at the benefits of CI.
Yeah, that's right. From a developer standpoint, my goal is always to become a better developer and to foster the more educated and grow myself, grow a developer. I just don't want to be a programmer. I want to be a true developer. And how to do that is really start taking advantage of continuous integration and a lot of other best practices out there. You know, be responsible for what you're coding. Don't say, oh, it worked on my machine. That the days of it worked on my machine should be gone with all the products that we currently have out there. And one other thing I'd like to mention too is just because you may want to, for folks that may not be running Team System or Team Foundation Server, don't feel like you have to buy Team Foundation Server and Team System clients. You can work with Team Foundation Server and use Visual Studio 2005 Professional, for example. It works with it. So it's not like you have to, some people get confused about that. Oh, I have to have this in order to work with the Team Foundation Server. You can have whatever client will allow you to work with it. But again, take advantage of that continuous integration.
Yeah, and a lot of people are still running, you know, older versions of Visual Studio, even, you know, pre-2005. There's a plugin that'll allow Visual Studio 2003 to work against Team Foundation Server. The other thing is that if you're not even a .NET shop, and I'm not sure how you'd stumble on this podcast, but you know, but thank you for listening. But if you're not a .NET developer, let's say you're a Java guy, there's actually Eclipse plugins that allow you to use Team Foundation Server on the back end.
Right, right.
So this isn't just a Microsoft you know, product. This is open to, you know, a number of different development environments, and we've actually have customers, you know, out there who are, you know, Java shops or who are mixed shop, part Java, part .NET. We're getting the advantages of continuous integration out of the tool.
Right, right. And to show how Microsoft embraces those things, one of the MVPs actually works for the company that creates the Eclipse plugin. So, I mean, it just kind of goes to show you that, you know, here's a company that's creating a product for the Java developers, but yet, you know, the guy's an MVP for Team System because of what he does for the community. That's a beautiful thing.
Cool. And speaking of community, I heard that you're a budding podcaster yourself?
Yeah, Larry, I'm glad you brought that up. You and Dave have inspired myself to go out, and I actually got the idea to do a podcast. I thought, what about having a bi-monthly podcast on TFS? So I called my real good friend, Mickey Gousset, and I said, Mickey, would you be interested in doing a podcast with me? And lo and behold, Mickey was thinking about the same thing for the last few months and says, hey, let's do it. So you can find information about the podcast and where to download them from TFSTimes.com or from the Indianapolis TFS user group at IndyTFS.org. And I'll be pushing the information out there and as we do them and how to hook them to RSS feeds and bring that, you know, get that down. But we're hoping that the podcasting will take off like the newsletter did and see what happens.
So really the podcast is almost like it'd be like the audio edition of TFSTimes.com, right?
Almost. And that's really good because we're still throwing around some of the ideas because it's in such its infancy yet that we're not really sure what is it we want to really convey. So do we want to do a topic-based? But that's a really good idea is actually just base it as an audio portion of what we did on the TFS newsletter. I think that would be cool.
Great. So people can check that out, again, at TFSTimes.com or
IndyTFS.org.
IndyTFS.org. And just to completely confuse people with yet another URL, can you give us your blog address?
Yes. I host a blog on WordPress, so it's phacker, H-A-C-K-E-R, .wordpress.com.
Hey, thanks for being on the Thirsty Developer today.
Oh, thank you guys for inviting me. I really had a great time. Thank you so much.
So, Dave, what did you think of the interview?
So, that you know, continuous integration is, you know, kind of a topic that's close to my heart. I remember, you know, back a few years ago, I was on a project where we first implemented continuous integration, but we had to essentially do it manually ourselves, you know, come up with like a little routine where we, you know, utilize some NANT build scripts and, you know, had a build process in place. And then every time we checked in, we'd have like a little listener into our check-in system that would essentially kick off these builds. And then something came along called cruise control, which we were able to take advantage of and actually replace our system. And it was much more efficient than what we had. And it's just one of those processes that we just entrenched into our software development lifecycle process. And it was really important for us to make sure that we were on the right target as we were building our application. And then with the advent of the Visual Studio Team System Tools and Team Foundation Server, they're carrying that notion right along into this product set to make it much easier for you to have a successful software development project.
So Dave, when you use CI, did you really see your code quality going up?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing was is that it really says, you know, right away it tells you, hey, something's wrong. You know, you need to look into it versus, you know, being surprised at a later time, whether that's an hour later, 2 hours later, even two or three days or weeks later, you're notified right away that you have an issue and you need to address it. So I think in that sense, you know, when there's a problem with your project and it's not addressed, you just lose nothing but time and money, you know, down the road. Whereas with this, if you know what somebody checked in right away, you still have that code fresh in your mind of like, what is the code that I just checked in or what did somebody else check in? We, you know, the person is still within, you know, walking distance, hopefully, or at least pick up a phone and talk to them. Hey, what did you check in? You can have that conversation of where the collision was, what the problem was, and get that addressed right away.
Yeah, I noticed that it also cleared up a lot of issues about what machine that you built on. Because unless you used a build server, you know, separately before, there was a tendency to kind of, you know, build it on whoever's machine was working the best that day. And, you'd always run into environmental issues about, you know, somebody had a newer version of a library installed, and it would always create issues on deployment. And using continuous integration kind of puts everything on one server. Again, you could do that with a dedicated build server, but I think it's one of the happy happenstances with using continuous integration.
Right. And, you know, that's a really interesting point to bring up is that, you know, if you don't have a dedicated build server today, get one. Most of the time, you don't need like a full-blown server box to do it. You can just have a desktop that's sitting around that's doing nothing at the point in time to act as your build server.
Virtual machines are great for that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a very important thing to have. And one thing that we learned in some of the projects that we did is that what people don't realize is that, you know, it's important to have a build server. It's important to have a build server that has all of your libraries that are sort of versioned at the appropriate version and are up to date on a central resource. Because what happens is typically developers will pull down code to their machine and they'll pull it down at various different times. And each developer might have a slightly different version than somebody else. And they're coding to something that's not matching up with everybody else. And they kind of get out of whack. So if they go to compile something and they are having issues compiling against a dedicated library and that library is out of version, they're having issues, and they may spend time in the cycles trying to figure out what the problem is and not knowing that they don't have the latest and greatest code. So what you need to do is have all of your shared libraries stored on your build server, and then inside of Visual Studio, what you can do is you can reference those libraries and set sort of an unknown feature of Visual Studio called a reference path, right? So what happens is this reference path points to the location of where you get your reference libraries, and you can put it sort of in a hierarchical order where maybe somebody on the development team is the one who's responsible for, you know, modifying the libraries. Well, he can point his reference path to a location on his local machine, whereas everybody else can point a reference directory, reference path to a location that's on the build server. And that's a very important thing to do, and it's very important to have that dedicated build server. It just makes things so much easier.
That's a great tip, Dave.
Yep. So I think with that, Larry, I'm all out of tips today. So we're going to end this week's show. Once again, thanks, everybody, for listening, and we appreciate everybody's feedback. Send that to thirstydeveloperlive.com. And once again, you can comment on each and every show if you go to thirstydeveloper.com. And you can read my blog, davebost.com, and you can reach Larry at larryclarkin.com. And, of course, you can find us both on Twitter and Facebook. And with that, Larry, we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Thirsty Developer. For more information, visit thirstydeveloper.com. We'll see you next time.
This is The Thirsty Developer, episode number 11 for January. What date is it today?